The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
If you'd like to skip the intro, please refer to the timestamp listed in the episode description. Thank you.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is April 4th right now.
2024. Don't forget the year.
I got it. Actually, I forgot to say, well, because we were kind of talking about the weather. We just recorded Patreon, how it was very rainy for you. This morning here in New York, it was friggin' snowing. Like, the roads were slippery. Everything's melted now already, but it was like sticking a little. It was on all the trees. It was like it was winter again.
How crazy.
Here in April. Very annoying. And it was torrential raining yesterday. So I'm ready for some nice friggin' weather.
The weather here has actually been amazing. Like, I feel like not today because it is pouring rain, but generally it's been so nice and even like nicer than summer has been, which is crazy. But now it seems like maybe it's realized that it's meant to be autumn and it's getting back into it.
We had 2 days where it was high 60s, almost 70 degrees, maybe 2 weeks ago, and it's just been shit ever since. We even bought, because we have like a back deck at this house, and we bought a little furniture set, so we got to sit out there for one day, and then I was like, we need to bring in all the cushions, it's going to rain for 4 days straight. So I'm just excited to like finally have a yard or something where I can go and sit outside, because I know I've said many times my old apartment I couldn't go outside basically because I had nowhere to go except
used to go on the
onto
roof.
The main street. Yeah, I'd go on the roof, or during the pandemic we'd sit and drink in the restaurant parking lot because it was closed. So yeah, no car updates for you.
No, nope. First car-free week for a very long time. So
hope
I feel
we're not
like
jinxing
it. I have nothing really going on, actually. Like I was just saying, it's been Easter here, so a short week. We are off on a holiday in a few weeks to Hawaii, so that'll be exciting. But yeah, other than that, not too much happening, really.
We were just talking about the eclipse. When this comes out, the eclipse will be over. But I don't know, maybe it's not as much of a insanity scramble for everyone, because I know it doesn't pass over everyone. But in New York, it's passing over. And some more further upstate is in the path of totality, where the moon's going to fully cover the sun, which is where it's going to get, like, it'll get a little dark out. And apparently the animals will all kind of go crazy and be nervous because of the sun getting dark. We're in like 90% totality or something. But if it's the same as it was, I think it was 2017. I remember at my job, we all went outside to watch it, and you have to have the special glasses so you don't blind yourself. Like, it's cool, but it'd be way cooler if you were in the path of totality where it got dark, because last time it happened, you just like, you see it go in front of it and you have to use the glasses to watch, and it's cool, but I didn't feel like my life was changed.
I feel like every time they're like, it's either cloudy and you just don't see it properly, or I've never actually seen a real proper eclipse. I'll have to pay attention next time there's one here.
Well, you said it was a 2028.
Yeah, I was like, I'm surely we get it too, but I guess I don't know. I haven't really even thought about the logistics of, you know, different day and night and things like that. But yeah, our next one's 2028.
So I mean, it's cool. That I think that was the first time I ever really did actually see something like that I remember. But my mom got me and my sister and all of us the little eclipse glasses, so I'm gonna be at work, but I'm gonna be like, I'm going outside.
What time is it on?
Like, it's around like 1 or 2 p.m. The schools are getting out. A lot of the schools are getting out early because it's around dismissal time for a lot of schools. Yeah. And they think everyone's going to be outside and like the traffic's going to be annoying. So they're letting the schools out a little early.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to go outside and look. It'd be cooler if I went upstate, but it's pretty far upstate where it's like Buffalo, Rochester, where it'd be like a 6-7 hour drive to get there.
You can just watch it online.
Yeah, I can Google pictures of the eclipse. So I don't know if anyone's in the path of full coverage, totality, whatever it's called. Let me know how it is. Send me a video.
Well, by the time this comes out, it would have already happened, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, send us any cool videos if you've got any.
Yeah, if you took some cool videos,
yeah,
send them. We might get lucky also, and be blessed because we just record the Patreon, like we said. And I'm not just like shamelessly plugging it, but there's a kookaburra at Olivia's that was laughing or squawking or whatever they do.
Thanks, so Olivia. Maybe
you'll get a little treat of some Australian wildlife in the background.
That was just saying in the other episode, they seem to be really noisy when it rains. Like if you hear it, because they make a squawking noise, that they say it's their laugh, the kookaburra laughing. So they always say that they do that before it rains, which is very true today. It's been raining a lot. So maybe you'll hear it again.
So if you hear some crazed animal in the background,
kookaburras are so funny. They are like my favorite bird because when you see them, they're not really scared of humans. Like that, like, you know, most birds will kind of fly away.
I think they're so cute
if you get near them. But like kookaburras, and they have these little fluffy heads. They're just so sweet. And like my dad loves kookaburras. He'll leave food out for them, which he's probably not meant to do. But so every time I go to their house, they've got like 20 kookaburras. And he's like, this is the mother one and this is the baby. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he knows them all.
That's like my dad. He used to feed the foxes, which again, I know you're not supposed to do, but he loved doing that. But at the Bronx Zoo, there's a kookaburra, there's like a bird aviary thing where they kind of fly free, and you could walk on the paths, and there's like railings, obviously. But the kookaburra would always sit on the railing and like hang out with everyone. It's like, oh, here I am, looking cute.
They're so friendly.
Love them. Wish they were here. I just googled them. I love their little heads.
I'd say every time I see them, I'm like, I wish I could just pat the little head, because it's like almost like my dog Donnie, so pattable, little fluffy head as well. Like, I just want to like with my finger just pat their little head.
Yeah, so you've got the kookaburra. I've got Peep. She is here sleeping. Peep, who no one cares about.
Oh.
She just picked up her little head. Peep. She's busy, she's resting. She's a queen. All right, should we get into gyps?
I know that when we did our gypsy episodes or gypsy updates, some people get mad, some people love it, and some people get mad. So if you don't like gypsy and her attention, just look at the timestamp and skip forward a few minutes, because we are going to give a gypsy update now.
Yeah, I think people just like to be like,
be a hater,
different, and be a hater in the sense of gypsy. Because I don't even think we posted about her. We posted when she first got out, which is relevant to our subject category, but we're not.
She's a murderer who got out of jail. And people are like, why are you, like, I'm absolutely not pro-gypsy. Like, in our episode, we spoke about how, you know, her mother was crazy, and like there's an understanding about how some things happen. I'm not absolutely not saying what she did is right. We're not, you know, like, people are like, why are you giving her airtime? She's a criminal.
Why do we give any of these people airtime?
Yeah, we discuss criminals, essentially.
I'm not pro or against her, but I just think she's a little silly and it's fun to follow her. I hope the best for her, and I hope she like has a great life going forward. Yeah. But I just
– essentially, because she did her time. She served her sentence that the court thought was appropriate. You know, good for her, I guess, living a best life now.
It kind of crosses the line for me, not saying she's a celebrity at all, but I love celebrity gossip and stuff like that. So it's almost like the best of both worlds in a way, where it's like silly gossip about someone, but also the true crime world.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you don't care, just skip ahead like 5 minutes or look at the timestamps in the episode notes that everyone seems to forget about. Not everyone. I know our good followers know of them, but regardless of what we do, people seem to be like, what timestamps?
Where are they?
They're there. Just please open your eyes. Okay, so Gypsy, there's a lot going on with her, it seems. It seems like that her and her husband, Ryan Scott Anderson, have separated. We got like wind of this a little bit before it was in the news, but we weren't sure if it was true because there's also a lot of Gypsy impersonators online.
Yeah, I found a screenshot. So Gypsy, just as a little bit of background too, Gypsy ended up getting rid of all her social media. She said that she was advised to either deactivate or like basically stop posting on the advice of her parole officer, so she didn't go back to jail, which is fair enough. So there was a screenshot from apparently a verified Facebook of Gypsy's called Gypsy Rose Anderson, and it said, "People have been asking what's going on in my life. Unfortunately, my husband and I are going through a separation and I moved in with my parents. I have the support of my family and friends to help guide me through this. I'm learning to listen to my heart. Right now, I need to let myself find who I am." And that was friends only. So we couldn't actually see the post on her Facebook to verify it. So we did have it a little bit before it hit the media, and I guess it turns out
one of her friends is a rat.
True.
Yeah, and sent it to us. So yeah, I did kind of think it might be true. Just, it does sound like something she would say.
Yeah.
But we weren't sure, so we didn't want to post about it. And then a little bit later, TMZ was like, breaking news. So yeah, it seems like they split. It says the split happened 3 months after Gypsy was released from prison. They were originally married in a ceremony in jail in July 2022. She had spoken previously about their plans to have a big wedding party. She said, we do plan on having a reception redo of our wedding with all of our family and our friends and the dress and the cake and everything because we deserve that. So our prison wedding was just something to where we can make our vows to each other. It was something that meant something to us. And I think the party is kind of for everybody else, but mostly for everybody else. In the Lifetime special that they did on the third episode, whatever the last episode of it was, or the last two episodes, it went kind of more into their relationship. He did seem like a nice guy, but I just wasn't sure how it was going to go because they did argue a lot because she was still talking to her former ex-fiance, who we'll get into. His name is Ken Erker. Ryan was mad that she was still talking to him. I guess her and Ken split up because he kind of couldn't deal with the Gypsy Rose fame and what everyone was saying about him being engaged to her. So that's relevant because he comes back around because it seems Ryan may have had a point to be a little concerned about him. So since the split, Gypsy has been spending time with her ex-fiance, Ken Erker. Gypsy and Ken got engaged while she was in prison in 2018. And I guess that he reached out after there was an HBO documentary about her. His mother said in an interview, "My son has never had any kind of ill intentions towards Gypsy. It devastated him when they broke up the first time, but he truly thought that that was what was best for Gypsy." So they've spoken about the nature of their relationship. They said, "We're just hanging out as friends." Oh, they said, "We've not had any intimacy. We're just hanging out as friends," per TMZ. And they also shut down some pregnancy gossip, with Gypsy saying, "I'm on birth control, like, what the hell?"
Because there are photos of them, like, outside a dollar store holding hands. Like, they went in there to get Dollar General. They went in there to get, like, snacks and soda or whatever. So they are, like, they do seem close. They are holding hands, but they've already addressed.
They're definitely dating.
So they did also go together and get matching tattoos recently. They got matching husky dogs. So there's a photo of them with their arm, like, it's on their kind of forearm, bottom of their forearm, outstretched.
Both their arms.
That's not a very good tattoo. Like, I feel like it's not a good tattoo for the ad for the tattoo place.
It's like random. Why huskies? I get that, like, it's for our strong bond. Random place, like, on their forearm below where their elbow is. It's just strange.
They got the tattoos at a place that's owned by Gypsy's cousin, Bobby. Bobby told People it was matching husky dog tattoos, a symbol for their strong bond. Nadia is the artist who actually did the tattoos, and she told People that Ken's tattoo is on his left forearm and Gypsy's is on her right. She said when the pair puts their arms together, the dogs face each other. Ken paid for both tattoos, which were done with black ink and no shading. Nadia said they were happy and excited. So I guess, I don't know, true love might
win out.
Like how
Gypsy's
overall.
Like, I need to figure out who I am, and then – days later, getting matching husky tattoos with her ex.
There's also been an OnlyFans apparently under Gypsy's name that has popped up. Gypsy has denied, and I think it was like $50 a month, which is like a lot for OnlyFans apparently. Anyway, Gypsy has denied that it belongs to her. She said, "I don't have an OnlyFans. Whatever it is going around with OnlyFans, that's not me. I would never do that."
So God, that's where she draws the line.
She,
murder. OnlyFans, no.
So it seems like even though her parole officer advised her to not be on social media, she's out there. She's back. She's not taking that advice anymore.
She's taking the town by storm. So that's... Talking about Gypsy is entertaining because you can be a little silly.
Yeah.
Whereas with most topics, we can't be.
And, you know, sometimes people are like, leave them alone. They want their privacy. She absolutely does not want her privacy.
No.
She's out there smoking outside the dollar store and hanging out with Ken and having a great time.
And I feel like she can take, like, a joke. It's not like we're bullying her, being mean to her or anything.
And she would be making money as well off her social media, so... Well, yeah. I'm assuming, so I know there's some laws about making money off crime, but I guess she can still make it off of social media. But
yeah, and I think the Lifetime thing did say they were, like, still filming, so maybe we will end up seeing more about all of this anyways, even though I didn't see anything mentioning, like, cameras being around, but who knows.
Yeah.
So that's the latest with our girl Gyps.
So before we get into the episode, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, IQ Bar. Sometimes in the morning, I'm rushing, I've slept in, you know, trying to get the kids ready. I don't have time to eat something proper. And by the time I get to work or wherever I need to be, I'm absolutely starving. And then it's sometimes hard to make good choices about healthy things to eat. You know, you go and get the easiest thing and it won't set you up for a great day.
Or it's hard to find things that are healthy that still have a lot of protein as well.
Yeah. So start each day right with IQ bars, brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three. Get 7 IQ bar flavors, 4 IQ mix flavors, and 4 IQ Joe flavors. And today our listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text CRIME to 64,000.
I love having an IQ bar on my way home from work because for some reason when I'm about to leave work, and get into the car and drive home, I'm like ravenously starving. So I used to just suffer and be super cranky. But now I remember to pack an IQ bar, put it in my bag, and on my way home, I'll eat it. So then I don't feel cranky and crazy driving home. Because now that I've moved, I have a little bit of a commute. So I'll have a little, the peanut butter IQ bar is my fave. It is so good. I love it. The Ultimate Sampler Pack is a great way to try all the IQ bar products and flavors. All IQ Bar products are entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners. And IQ Bar makes the number one brain and body nutrition bar, hydration mix, and instant coffee in the U.S.
Refuel smarter with IQ Bar's Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ Bars, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks. And now our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text CRIME to 64,000. Get your discount, text CRIME, C-R-I-M-E, to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
Okay, so let's get into what we're talking about today. We are going to be talking about missing Sebastian Rogers. This has been a big one that a lot of people have been following online. Sebastian he's a 15-year-old boy who has been missing from Tennessee. Since February 25th, he's been diagnosed with high-functioning autism, and he also has medication that he needs to take daily.
The search in the air and on the ground for Sebastian Rogers has been scaled back over the past month, but officials say they're still working on the case every day.
Interviewing individuals, re-interviewing individuals, checking out leads, rechecking leads.
Susan Nyland says they're doing an old-fashioned police investigation, including interviewing Sebastian's parents, who have been cooperating since the beginning.
There is not any kind of an indication that there is a criminal element involved, but we are keeping options open. We don't know what has happened.
At this point, they haven't found any videos or other physical evidence that's connected to Sebastian.
We are exploring every lead that comes in and every tip that comes in.
Chief Deputy Eric Craddock says the Sheriff's Department has not received any actionable leads from more than 300 tips.
Nothing would make me happier than to wake up tomorrow morning with a tip that cracks this case wide open and we find Sebastian and bring him home.
But he wouldn't say where the investigation goes from here beyond asking people to remain on the lookout for Sebastian.
We are here and we are dedicated.
In Gallatin, Brendan Tierney, WSMV4.
Officials are also concerned about misinformation spreading on social media surrounding Sebastian's disappearance. They say there are a lot of rumors and speculation online. And that becomes a problem when people bog down tip lines with their theories instead of real, concrete evidence. In some cases, that diverts time and energy away from the search for Sebastian as crews check out the rumors. Authorities say there's no evidence of any crimes, and Sebastian's parents have been cooperating with the investigation since the beginning.
So this has been a big one in our Facebook group, especially Stacy, who is a great member of our Facebook group. She did a lot of research on this case, so a lot of our notes actually come from the information that she compiled, so we're very grateful to her for that.
And there's actually two Stacys, which is a little bit confusing, S-T-A-C-I and S-T-A-C-E-Y, and both of them have done amazing notes, so some of their notes are
the Stacys.
Part of these episodes. Yeah, the double Stacys.
Thank you to the Stacys of the Facebook group. And if you do want to join our Facebook group, I know we don't talk about it a ton on here. It's almost like its own entity because it did come before the podcast. It's the True Crime Society Calling for Backup group is our main group now. There still is the True Crime Society one, but that one kept getting hammered by Facebook. We thought the group was going to get potentially deleted. So the backup one is our more active main one now. So if you're not in that one and you use Facebook, come on down. Okay. So first, some background as to who all the characters or players or family members in this story are. So we have Sebastian's mother is Katie Proudfoot. She's a student and she's also an installation technician for Home Security Service. Her husband, so I guess also technically Sebastian's stepfather, is Chris Proudfoot. And until recently, he was working as a crane operator at St. Jude's Hospital in Memphis. And Sebastian's father is Seth Rogers. He is employed by Davidson County Sheriff's Office as a corrections officer. So we've got Katie is the mom, Seth is the dad, Chris is the stepdad. So in terms of custody, Sebastian visits Seth every second weekend and has regular phone contact with him. Katie usually visits Chris in Memphis on the weekends that Sebastian's with his dad. And during the school holidays, Sebastian is often with Seth. So like 50-50 custody, I guess, is what he said. But that's how it works out. So at the end of the current school year, Sebastian was meant to go move in with his dad and live with him more full-time versus living with the mom more full-time. So they basically swap their custody situations. So like I said, Sebastian has high functioning autism and his mother described him as being very smart and not a mischievous child by any means. He loves animals and he has two dogs at home and he even had a snake at one point. There's a picture of him holding a snake looking very, very happy. Way too happy to be holding a snake. And he also loves gaming, particularly Minecraft, like many of the kiddos these days. Sebastian has limited social skills, and for Christmas one year, he even asked for some friends, which is very sad.
Oh no, heartbreaking, poor kid.
Yeah. His internet access was heavily monitored and restricted, and his phone, so he had like a little cell phone, but it only had the ability to call or text, so it couldn't go online with it or anything like that. He, when he was at his mother's, he played Minecraft on a Nintendo Switch that didn't have access to any online chats or anything like that. And then at his father's house, Seth's house, Sebastian had access to a PlayStation and he played some multiplayer games like Call of Duty. But Seth said that he only communicated with people that they actually knew and he only played it when Seth was present there with him and he never played it unsupervised. We know that on Sunday, February 24th, Sebastian had pancakes for breakfast and he was seen on a FaceTime call by some family members. He then went bowling with his mother at some point and they went out to dinner. And Seth confirmed that there is footage of these things. So Katie said Sebastian's job was to take the trash to the end of the driveway. And I guess when they got back later that night, he did that. And she told him to go to bed around 9 p.m. that night. Katie said he was doing something in his room because about an hour later, I heard some noise and I was like, I don't care what you're doing in there, but go to sleep. It seems like this noise was a thud. It would be around 10 p.m. And Katie said she called to him asking if he fell out of bed, and he said no. So there was a response to the noise. So it's not like someone came and snatched him. Yeah. So between 9:30 and 12 a.m., Katie said she was studying and on the phone with Chris, and that was a usual thing they did. And at midnight, Chris suggested that Katie go to bed because she was dozing off on the phone, which was also said to be a regular occurrence.
I feel like Chris, if I have this right, was away for work. Like, that's why obviously they were married, but they weren't in the house together. So that's why they were talking on the phone, I think, is the reasoning I've heard.
Do they not live together? Because it said that on weekends that Sebastian was at Seth, she'd go and visit Chris.
Yeah, so I think he worked elsewhere. And I think that's also why then later it comes in and that
they were leaving.
Yeah. So I feel like they didn't live together full time due to Chris's work.
So after she decided to get off the phone and go to bed, she put the dogs in their area, which I guess was like a sunroom, and then went to bed herself. And she didn't check in on Sebastian at that time before going to bed. So in the morning, she went to wake Sebastian for school and found that his bed was empty. So this would now be February 26th. She said, at 6 o'clock, I went to wake him up for school Monday morning, and that's when he wasn't there. Katie said that she called Chris at work. She said, I can't find him. And Chris asked, what do you mean you can't find him? And she said, he's not in the house. Katie said she searched the entire house, but still couldn't find him. She said, I didn't see him in his room. I looked all over. I ran through the whole house. I looked out all the doors and windows, and I was like hollering his name. I jumped in my car and I drove around the neighborhood and I drove over by the school. And like, at this point, I was like hysterical. I was crying. I was screaming.
Can you walk us through what you're thinking right now?
I just want my baby to be okay. I don't know where he's at.
Mom Katie broke down several times in our interview, but says her hope is strong that her son Sebastian will be found safe and return home.
He's going to walk through that door, and this street will be flooded again with family and relatives all waiting to hug and love him. And
stepdad Chris says it's been an emotional roller coaster that all started Sunday night, February 25th.
Pretty normal. He was playing in his room. When I told him to go to bed, he did. he said, good night, Mom. I love you.
Katie says she went to wake up Sebastian around 6 a.m. Monday for school, and he was gone. Within minutes, Katie says she was on the phone with Chris, who was working out of town, and they quickly called 911.
And he's not a runner. He's never run away before. I don't know why. I don't know why he walked out that door.
I mean, he's a good kid. He's not a mischievous child by any means.
Katie and Chris say Sebastian is not on social media. While he loves to play Minecraft, they tell me he does not have any online capabilities. I asked if there was any reason he might want to leave.
We've been combing over that day and even the weeks before he left, and I haven't been able to figure it out. That morning he was laughing, he was joking.
It's as if Sebastian vanished. No sign of him on any video throughout the community.
Sebastian's father would later say, his Nintendo Switch was there, his phone was in the kitchen, I still can't figure it out, I've been looking everywhere, handing out flyers. In terms of the layout of the house, it has three entrances or exits. One that leads to the garage. One is through the sunroom, which is where the dogs would be, and the other one would be the front door. So their home doesn't have a security alarm or any Ring doorbells or cameras. The outdoor lighting is usually turned off, other than some solar-powered lights in the garden and two small lights above the garage. And some people have pointed out it's very weird that she doesn't have any security, considering she works for a home security installation company. It's not ADP, but it's like a big one like that. I think it starts with a B. But it's like, wouldn't you get a discount? So Katie said that the dogs wouldn't have reacted if she or Sebastian were moving around the house, but they would react if there was a stranger coming into the house.
We did have someone to ask on our Patreon if the doors were locked when the mother got up. So the answer that we found for that is basically the back door is said to be a key lock, and then you lock it again from the outside. The front door is a code that Sebastian knew, but it doesn't record each time that it's used. And basically that if it was via the garage, there would have been too much noise and Katie would have heard it. So also, like, I guess it's indicating that no one entered the house because the dogs would have made noise if they saw someone else that wasn't Katie or Sebastian via the sunroom. So there's like quite a lot of questions about how he was able to get in and out. It seems like maybe it was the front door because it has the code. I don't know, but yeah, just some interesting points. I have one with
the code, and it doesn't. I thought it would be cool if it said like every time it opened that you could like look back on, but mine doesn't say anything like that either. I know some do, but some don't. She also said, my son doesn't run and he's not a runner. He's never run away before. She said, I don't know why he would have walked out that door. So Seth found out that Sebastian was missing from Chris. Seth finished a 12-hour shift at 7 a.m. and looked at his phone around 7:20, and he saw that he had a text from Chris saying that there was an emergency. So Seth was at the house by 8 a.m. An endangered child alert was issued at approximately 11:17 a.m. by the Tennessee Bureau of Investigations, or the TBI, on behalf of the Sumner County Sheriff's Office. In the alert, investigators said Sebastian was last seen earlier that day near Stafford Court in Hendersonville, adding that he was wearing a black sweatshirt, black sweatpants, and glasses. Most reports say that Sebastian was not wearing shoes. When they say that he, do they just mean like at their house he was seen, or is there something?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I mean? Because like,
I'm guessing
what he was wearing.
Like, as far as I know, he hasn't been seen. Like, there's no CCTV. There's nothing like that. So I'm guessing maybe they're saying the mother would have said, well, his black sweatshirt is missing. Or, you know, maybe he had it, I don't know, picked out for the next day and it was gone or something like that. But, and I also don't know how they, maybe she knew all his shoes and they were all there. I don't know. But it's interesting how they know he wasn't wearing shoes.
Yeah, I think they just, when the interview I saw with the dad, they just said that his shoes were at the house. Maybe he didn't have that many pairs or something.
Yeah.
So Sumner County Emergency Management Agency Director Ken Widener said over 200 people joined the search for Sebastian on that day, including multiple canine teams, mounted units, helicopter crews, and drones. The search team covered a nearly 5-mile radius. Chief Deputy Eric Craddock with the Sumner County Sheriff's Office said, I can't recall off the top of my head when the last search like this was. Hopefully not very often.
Yeah.
Obviously, this one is exponentially more important, being a child who does have autism. On Tuesday, February 27th, the TBI announced that the endangered child alert had been changed to an Amber alert. And just to get ahead of it, because I'm sure there will be questions. Sometimes the police, if they feel supported enough, they can like force an Amber alert along if they feel like the kid's in danger.
Really meet the criteria because they don't have any information about the abductor or a vehicle or anything like that. But yeah, obviously they thought the threat to Sebastian was so great, they did it anyway.
Yeah. On this day, dozens of agencies continued searching for him and began employing unique tactics, such as blasting his favorite song, Eye of the Tiger, while searching in different areas to try to call out to him. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen that a few times where there was another case here where it was an autistic child who went missing and that child's favorite song was Bohemian Rhapsody. So they found that child fine and safe eventually. But yeah, it's a tactic, I guess, just to make them feel safe and secure and to kind of lure them if they're hiding anywhere.
Yeah. Local residents were asked to check their security cameras and report any information to authorities. This brings us to February 29th. Police drained a local pond, but nothing was found. Emergency Management Agency Director Ken Widener said that search and rescue dogs had not been able to pick up Sebastian's scent. Especially if he wasn't wearing shoes, you'd think he'd leave more scent. Monday, March 4th, the search was scaled back. Authorities announced that they were transitioning from searching to an investigation. Chief Deputy Eric Craddock said, This does not diminish our commitment to finding Sebastian. This is simply us transitioning from the ground search to the investigative side. I feel like that always gets people in a panic, but really it just means they're investigating more instead of being like, hey, let's just get out there and search. Like, and they're going to go off tips and leads and
by that point, if he was out there and let's just say injured, it's probably very unlikely that he would still be alive. So at some point you have to use the resources that you've got for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to, the probability of him being alive out there and keeping searching wouldn't make much sense by that point.
Yeah. He also added that there were no leads, no details to indicate that Sebastian is not alive.
I know that goes against what I just said, but I'm talking to me. I mean, like, in terms of an injury type thing, like that, what he's saying there is there's no evidence that means there was foul play. So he could have been abducted or, you know, have left to his own accord.
Yeah. They're basically saying, like, we haven't found a whole bunch of his blood or anything like that. On the same day, Sebastian's mother spoke to the media for the first time about their child's disappearance, saying, I just want my baby to be okay. I wouldn't wish this on anyone. His stepfather, Chris, said the family had been on one constant roller coaster ride of helplessness and hopelessness since Sebastian had vanished. The couples received backlash for not speaking out earlier, to which they say they shouldn't be judged because no one knows what they're going through. They said, you don't know, and I don't wish you to ever know. Just be kind to people. It's just that simple. So we'll get into it more, I'm assuming, as we get a little further along, but a lot of people are definitely side-eyeing the stepfather and his mother. The stepfather does from, I know there's many sides to many, to all stories, but seems like Chris, the stepfather, might be like a piece of shit, kind of.
On Thursday, 7th of March, police searched a landfill in White Plains, Kentucky, and this area is where the trash from Sebastian's neighborhood is taken. Officials called the search of the landfill a precautionary measure to eliminate possible options and questions and said that there was no specific information that had actually led them to search there. The search concluded that evening with authorities later stating that they basically hadn't found anything. I have read that this search did come around after an employee told law enforcement that he thought the bins in Sebastian's area felt heavier than normal. Sumner County Sheriff Sonny Weatherford said, while we'd hoped for a different outcome, our commitment to finding Sebastian remains unwavering. We will continue to explore all available avenues and resources to bring closure to this case and provide answers to Sebastian's family and loved ones. On March 10, Sebastian's father, Seth, spoke to the media. He confirmed that Sebastian was not the type to wander off and that he would never go far without shoes on. He also spoke about why Sebastian basically likes to have shoes and socks on. He said he decided he wanted to step into a mound of what he thought was dirt. It was fire ants, and since then he doesn't like to get his feet in the dirt. He likes to have his shoes and socks on. He said in order for him to do something that's out of the normal, something would have had to happen that he felt he just couldn't deal with it anymore, which I guess is a bit of shade and side eye to his ex-partner.
Mm-hmm.
He also mentioned that a search dog had apparently traced Sebastian's scent to a construction site, but it turned out to be a false alarm. He said one dog tracked him to construction area over there and it just disappeared and it's confusing. There are missing pieces to this puzzle and I'm having difficulty solving this. Seth also said that it makes absolutely no sense. There has been no trace of him. I'm hoping he's still alive. That's my main hope right now. So on March 14, police got CCTV that apparently showed some activity outside the house on the night that Sebastian disappeared. At 3:10 a.m., two specks of light appeared outside the family home. The chief deputy Craddock told the media that there are several clips that have come in at that point and that investigators were reviewing them for more clues. There is a clip that shows it's basically a pitch black neighborhood with two lights that appear to be people with flashlights moving towards each other before moving off the screen.
I think so it must be like cell phones though. Yeah, it's hard to say.
It's so weird. But like, so for a long time, people were like, this must be mean something in the case. Maybe someone met Sebastian or lured him out there. Seth, though, has said, nothing that is being assumed right now is actually true of that video. He said, everyone is trying to assume it's a flashlight. I hate to say this. It's not as much as we would love it to be one. It's not. And the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation has also kind of confirmed this. It says the video has been collected and from the beginning has been analyzed and enhanced where possible by tech experts. Today, nothing gathered from these video systems has determined to be significant. They also
just don't give you like a clear Like, what are you saying?
Yeah, what is it? Like, maybe it's like a reflection. Like, it could, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it could be many things, but give us some more information. They also said, we do caution that some surveillance video being shared in the public may have been misinterpreted or misidentified or not shown in its entirety. It has been determined that it does not hold any evidentiary significance to the investigation, which I find so interesting because it seems like there were some lights outside the house, but the police are saying basically
disregard it. I'm just like, so what is it? Like, tell people what it is or what you think it is so that people like, stop and I know with the conspiracy theories.
Maybe they're trying to withhold things for the integrity of the investigation, but I feel like sometimes them just saying, look, it's a reflection of this. This is what we believe it is. Just nip it in the bud, but they have never come out and said that.
And I've seen some people speculate, like, if there's people out there, obviously, who think the mom and stepdad are involved, that maybe they're trying to, like, trick them into being more lax or something.
On Saturday, March 23rd, the United Cajun Navy announced that they were joining the search. This is a volunteer-run organization which assists with missing person searches, and they said they were sending a team with a canine unit to try and find Sebastian. So just a few days later, on March 29, the United Cajun Navy announced that they were pulling back and regrouping, quote, due to increasing security concerns. They made a Facebook post that said, this decision was not taken lightly and is made with the safety of all volunteers in mind. We want to thank all the volunteers that plan to be out searching today. WSMV4 reported that the group had apparently received death threats online and in person, which I find is so weird. Who is making death threats to a search investigation?
I saw a little bit more about it. I think that people were saying on Reddit, where I was reading more about this group in general, that I guess it was because they were on, like, private property, and maybe that's why people were threatening them. But then I've also seen people speculate. So apparently the United Cajun Army, I mean Navy, that is this one, is, like, not the original one. The original group actually, like, changed their name to not be affiliated with this group. So this group seems to be a little more scammy. I've seen a lot of different stories online about them, how they basically try to come get a lot of attention. They get a lot of donations, but then they don't really actually do much. So some people are saying that maybe the death threats thing was just kind of like a way for them to not actually search or do anything.
And I have read too that the police have said that basically they haven't received any reports from this group about the death threats, which you would think if someone is threatening to kill you, you would probably tell the police, but the police have said nothing has come in from them.
Yeah, like, it could have been like one disgruntled person being like, hey, why are all you people on my property who, like, didn't know what was going on? But yeah, someone from the press conference, I want to talk about later, but someone said during the press conference about Sebastian Rogers, law enforcement confirms that the United Cajun Navy are liars. UCN is not working in concert with LE. UCN has not filed any reports about threats. LE has never communicated with UCN. LE thanked UCN for their role of printing flyers. So I just saved a comment just to try to talk about a little bit more how they're scammy. I did see a long thing that I couldn't find again about how last year they basically got like $500,000 in donations, but there's no one knows how the money was used. There's no proof of how the money was used. Like, it was supposed to be meant for searching for people, but it wasn't. I'll try to find it again so that I can post it so you guys can read about it. But one comment on Reddit said, because they were involved with the Riley Strain search. So this person said, my first red flag was when they had the boats looking ready to go for Riley, and then they announced that they needed gas. They were wasting daylight and precious time. Sad they're scammers pretending to be good people. Shame on them. So it seems like they kind of just do a lot of, like, dilly-dallying instead of really doing anything.
Yeah.
Someone else said, I'm in South Louisiana and they are scammers. When the Secor Power was capsized in the Gulf of Mexico right off of Fortune, sorry if I'm saying these wrong, they came to the rescue to find the missing men. They ended up taking more than half of the money raised, and the families had to fight for what was supposed to be theirs. One guy who took time away from his job to help these families in search was dragged through hell and back trying to fight for what these families and their loved ones lost, or what their loved ones rightfully deserved. Todd Terrell is the biggest lying, conniving POS. It was boots on the ground for everyone who had volunteered their time, but UCN was only there for the cameras and the donations. It got very ugly. So there's just a lot of stories like that out there. So I wouldn't be shocked if they were exaggerating the death threats.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Like when I first heard that, I'm like, I feel like that's the first time ever I've heard of a search company or search, you know, group being, I don't know, pulling out due to death threats. Very strange.
Yeah.
So one thing that's come up a lot is that in late March, Katie left the home where Sebastian disappeared from, and both she and Chris got grilled by the media. I've read that they kind of left in their RV, and they were basically, it was insinuated that they were taking off. Like even we had a message on Instagram yesterday from someone saying, do they really just leave and go on vacation? Chris spoke and he said, I'm going back to work. Katie said she's left to accompany my husband going to back to work. She added that she planned to return home but didn't specify when. She said that she was concerned about being away while the search continues because my son could be anywhere and we're looking everywhere and anywhere. Like, do you know what? I'm not caping for them. I don't know what's happened to Sebastian, but I feel like people still do have to work. I know it's, you know, they still have to pay bills and have money and all that coming in. So I feel like this was maybe made out by the media to be a bigger thing than it was.
I guess the argument is like she didn't have to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she didn't go anyway. Like, do you know what I mean? But she was not living there with Chris at the time, but then she decided to when Sebastian went missing. So I guess the timing is interesting, but it was a very big deal about it made in the media.
Yeah.
So also in late March, Seth spoke to News Nation and he spoke about issues between him and Katie and Chris. He said, I haven't spoken to them for 2 weeks. They're not talking to me. He also mentioned again that Sebastian's shoes were at the front door, which gives us a little bit more information about why they think his shoes, wasn't wearing shoes. His Nintendo Switch was there. His phone was there. I can't figure it out, Seth said. At that time too, Katie and Chris appeared in the media and said that the police had cleared them of any wrongdoing in the case. Katie said that she believed someone had Sebastian. She said, I felt if he had been close to the house or had walked off, that we would have found him by now with as many people as have been searching. She said, we love you so much and we want you to come home. You're not in trouble. I just want my baby to be okay. So despite Katie saying that the police had cleared them of any wrongdoing, on April 2nd, so literally just this week, the TBI gave an update on Sebastian's case. It's now in its 6th week. So we are recording in the 6th week that he has been missing. Eric Craddock, the chief deputy, spoke again. He said, we're all extremely concerned for Sebastian's welfare, saying that there had been no sightings and their commitment to finding Sebastian remains unwavering. So this is a summary of the press conference from Stacey that we mentioned, S-T-A-C-E-Y. They did speak a lot. A lot of it was kind of reiterated information, so we're just including the new information. They said that police are still very committed to finding Sebastian. He hasn't been forgotten about. Sebastian's parents have been cooperating since the beginning. There is no evidence of criminal element involved, but all possibilities are on the table. They have cautioned people about listening to social media rumors and sharing incorrect information, and as it can cause distractions in the case. They said they had 314 tips that had come in as of that time of the press conference, and they asked the public to keep an eye on their properties for any hiding spaces that a teenager might go. So they said there is no evidence to suggest foul play or that his parents are involved, but they did reiterate that basically nothing has been ruled out. They haven't, and they, I believe the police haven't said they've ruled out anyone as a suspect. They also haven't named any persons of interest though. They did say, like we mentioned quickly, that United Cajun Navy is working independently and that they hadn't filed any reports in regards to the threats received apparently by the United Cajun Navy. At that point, they did also mention that some glasses had been recovered. Sebastian did wear glasses. He's got glasses in pretty much every photo, so I'm assuming he wore them all the time. Chief Craddock said there were some glasses found in the last few days, but they were still investigating if they belonged to Sebastian. So it did come out too after that that glasses were not Sebastian's and are not related to the case. Mm. So in the last few days, Seth has given some more interviews and he has spoken about how Sebastian was sexually assaulted as a child while under Katie's care. This is a comment online because it was like a video interview that he did. It says, Seth shared that Sebastian suffered sexual assault when he was 8 years old while in Katie and Chris's custody. Seth was unable to do anything about it because the perpetrator was a 13-year-old boy. The sentiment was that Katie allowed this to happen because she had a habit of not watching over him like she should. He also shared that Katie and Chris were not getting Sebastian the proper therapy for that trauma. He also shared that Chris was accusing Sebastian of doing the same thing to Faith, which is Chris's daughter. It was all very horrible to hear and gut-wrenching, as Seth felt so defeated and angry over the whole mess. They've also said that Sebastian was suspended from a previous school for inappropriate behavior towards female classmate or classmates.
Yeah, so I watched one of the interviews. I guess he did a few. I watched one, I think it was Justin on TikTok is his YouTube name. I'm assuming he must also have a TikTok, but you can watch it on YouTube. Yeah, he did say all those things. I don't know. The dad seems like a good, like he really cares. He's going out searching every day. He does talk about Sebastian in a way where you know, sometimes when in these cases, you feel like they don't really care about their kid, but you could tell that Seth really does. He tells a lot of stories about him, so like you can really get a good picture for who Sebastian is. And I think a lot of people see that, which is why Seth seems to have a lot of support.
And I guess too, essentially, he wasn't in, like, it would be very different if he was in Seth's care at the time that this happened, where he was in Katie's care. So it's, I guess, easier for people to be on Seth's side maybe as well.
Yeah, and it does seem like now, since these interviews were like last night our time, it seems like he's getting to the point where he is becoming very frustrated with Katie and Chris, because he used to not really say much about them or try not to really throw them under the bus like this, but it seems like he's getting frustrated with them. He has pointed out that they don't go out and search for him. They really don't talk about him. He said in any interviews that he's seen, they don't talk about him like as a person as much. They're more like defending themselves. He said things like actions speak louder than words, referring to them, and that they shouldn't be parents, basically. There is a lot of talk also that, so there's a lot of family turmoil kind of that's coming out. A lot of it's on, if you want to read more about it, the subreddit. It's just Sebastian Rogers has a lot of the information. But in reference to the sexual assault, it's being said that Chris was basically accusing Sebastian of doing the same thing to his younger daughter. Chris, I guess, is trying to get custody of his younger daughter, Faith. And he's in like a pretty contested custody battle with his ex over the custody of the daughter. So apparently he calls Sebastian like a pedophile and things like that. And I don't know, it just kind of, if that's all true, that could give like a motive type thing maybe. I did find another comment on Reddit that says, someone says, does anyone know why his biological daughter has a restraining order against him? But I think it's actually the mom, his ex. And someone else said, says he, Chris Proudfoot, was court-ordered to take quite a few parenting and anger management classes. I think there's a restraining order to keep him away from the biological daughter. I need to get my lawyer husband to help me decipher some of the court lingo. He seems so controlling. I got a feeling from the interview that there's a lot of tension, anger, and punishment in their household. And someone else said, he's been married 4 or 5 times, has one daughter with a seemingly contested custody case. He just reopened this recently and has current ongoing court events. He was in the military, currently works for a company as a crane operator. He had to take anger management type classes for his custody case. Supposedly drives a pickup truck. Rumors I've heard from a reliable source, unconfirmed but worth noting. He calls Sebastian a retard and has physically abused him. He makes fun of Sebastian for not playing any sports. So I've seen a lot of talk of things like that. Again, nothing official and confirmed, but I've seen things like that being said a lot online.
One thing I find interesting too is that Seth is out there. He's doing interviews. Like, he's done interviews in the last few hours, essentially.
He's doing interviews with everyone.
Like. Yeah. So, but then there's an article from today, from USA Today, where basically it says Sebastian's family, but I'm assuming this is Katie and Chris, it says have declined to speak publicly about the disappearance. They issued a statement on Wednesday, so yesterday, through the TBI. They said, understandably, there is interest in hearing from friends and family to help provide more of a personal context about Sebastian. However, we have been requested by the family to let local media know they are not in a position to speak to or be available to the media at this time. So that is a very different position to the one that Seth is taking at the moment.
Yeah. Like Seth was saying, I don't know why it's really relevant, but it was just a little funny how like on Easter they were out at Cracker Barrel, not given a fuck instead of out searching. Chris's ex, the one who he has the daughter with, she also, I think, put out a video kind of talking about him or did an interview talking about him. And she said how Chris recently reopened their custody with the daughter and is trying to get custody of the daughter. And she was saying how she doesn't even think that he actually wants custody and it's all about control for him, and that she thinks a lot of the things that he does is related to just having control.
So that is it in kind of the chronological timeline of what has happened in Sebastian's case. As we said, this is the 6th week he has been missing. By the time this comes out, if he isn't found, it'll be around 7 weeks. We did ask on our Instagram what people thought had happened in this case. 73%, and to be fair, I didn't specify which parents in this one, but it's just, you know, hard for brevity. But 73% said they thought the parents were involved. 13% said that he ran away or left of his own accord, 7% stranger abduction, and 7% other. So I guess they're the main theories. Number one, that his parents are involved. Number two, that he ran away. I guess this one kind of fits in with that. Maybe he met someone online and was catfished and is with them. Like, it's happened before. We saw with Alicia Navarro. Remember, she was found alive years later. Mm-hmm. And she also, I believe, had high-functioning autism or something along those lines. Or a stranger abduction. I feel like the stranger abduction is very unlikely. The dogs didn't make a sound. The mother has said all the doors were locked. I feel like something happened within that house. Either Sebastian left or something else happened and that is being covered up. I don't feel like a stranger is involved, as in just picking a random house and abducting Sebastian.
Yeah, I think either Chris and Katie are involved in some type of way. Either they did something or they're just, it's a bad environment and Sebastian left because of that.
Yeah. I just wonder how someone like Sebastian could survive for 6 weeks out there now. Like, maybe he did leave and was, you know, preyed upon by someone, but I just can't see him with no phone. Yeah, he's a 15-year-old with special needs. I just can't see how he could be surviving out there for 6 weeks with no resources, no money, no, not even a phone, nothing. I feel like it's very unlikely. Either, like, the only way I think he could be alive now is if he is staying with someone or someone is harboring him.
Yeah, I agree.
And again, it has happened in the past. Like, it's, but with Alicia Navarro, she left a note for her mother saying, like, basically I'm paraphrasing, but sorry and I'll be back one day or something like that. And she met an older man online and was found states away years later. So it's not, you know, totally impossible that it could happen, but it seems like Sebastian's internet use was very highly monitored. I don't believe he had funds, for example, to buy a second phone, you know, a burner phone or anything like that.
Also, it seems like he had like a good enough relationship with his dad, and he did have a phone that he could call and text on, where if he felt like he needed to leave, maybe he hopefully would have contacted his dad. I did see people also say, though, he could have been afraid of the repercussions if Chris is really as awful as the rumors say. But I just also think it's weird he left, like you said, like his phone, all his stuff, wasn't wearing shoes apparently. And he does take medications. I mentioned early on, his dad said he takes medications for impulse control, like ADD or ADHD medication, and medication for sleeping, because I guess he's always had sleep problems. I have seen people say that he had bedwetting problems, but only at Chris and Katie's house. Like, that didn't really happen at Seth's house. Again, he was at Chris and Katie's house, his mom's house, much more, so that could also be a factor, to be fair, but that's just other things I've seen people saying.
And even things like, there's obviously CCTV of their neighborhood and the house because they've said it was pitch black. So that indicates, for example, that no car, like, obviously, you know, he could have walked down the street and been picked up by a car, but he wasn't seen on CCTV. No vehicles were seen on CCTV kind of picking him up that night.
But there's no scent.
Yeah, there's no scent apparently. I just feel like all of these things indicate that he somehow, I don't know, I don't want to cast aspersions because obviously we don't know what happened, but maybe something happened inside the house and he essentially never left that house willingly.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if that is what happened, but also to just, like, again, try to be fair, there's a lot of hearsay, a lot of rumors and gossip that are coming from sources, even though now the father is coming out and saying, confirming more of those things. It does seem like there's a lot of confirmation bias online from people, because most people are on the side of Seth and think that Katie and Chris had something to do with it. So it could be skewing some of the things that come out. But like I said, there's a lot of information on the subreddit if you want to read more about all of that. But I don't know, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah. Until I started looking into it, I really didn't have any idea about what had happened to him. But I really think the only two real choices are that a family member did something to him, or that he just got sick of it and left and something has happened to him since, or someone is harboring him. I think that they're really the only two options. I definitely don't think stranger abduction. I don't think he left to take his own life, probably. Do you know what I mean? I just feel like they are the two most likely sad scenarios.
Yeah, I agree.
We do have a blog, so, you know, you can look at the CCTV footage. There's interviews with the family out there, photos of Sebastian. But I just can't believe that a 15-year-old is still missing 6 weeks later and there's just nothing. There's no evidence. There's, you know, the TBI have said disregarded the apparent footage that they've got outside the house. I just can't see how a child with special needs can vanish like that without someone else being involved.
Yeah, definitely. And if there, I guess there definitely could be an update or more coming out by the time this episode comes out. So if there's anything, I will put in a clip here. If anything else happens, obviously we won't be able to discuss. I mean, maybe we could hop back on, but if anything else happens, we'll talk about it in the next episode as well. And follow us on Instagram, because that's where we're always posting the most current updates and everything. And I did mention our Facebook group earlier. There's a lot of good threads in the group on this case if you want to learn more about it.
Just to quickly add in before you finish up too, this is a case I feel that has a ton of online interest. There's a lot of people who know a lot or think they know a lot about the case.
Passionate.
And yeah, very passionate people. Have a lot of opinions. So if what we've tried to do is give you the overview of the facts, with, you know, some of the possibilities sprinkled in. So we know there are many more things that are being discussed online. And if you want to do a deep dive, there's Facebook groups, there's Reddit, there's tons of information out there. But that is what we've tried to do with this episode.
And a lot of it's just hearsay. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I know we always say that, but we always try to do just like a general overview of everything, so then you could go do your own research. But we still feel like we always have to say that, because there's always going to be people being like, why didn't you say this crazy theory or this conspiracy or talk about this person? And it's always going to happen.
Mention that Katie ate this for breakfast that day. Like, there's all these things. Yeah. We just try and kind of pick out the main points and things that could impact the story. And we know, you know, there's obviously going to be people who know everything about this case. So if you want to do a deep dive, there's tons and tons of resources online.
Yep. So, like I said, Instagram, True Crime Society. If you want to follow our personal accounts, mine's StephSum_. Olivia's is TCS Olivia. If you want to see what we're up to and all the usual stuff. If you could share the podcast, your Instagram stories or anything like that, that's a big help to us. We usually will share them. We always share them when you guys post them. So I don't know why I say usually. we share them when you guys do that. And it's a big help to us to spread awareness of the podcast. So keep doing that and leave us any nice reviews, nice comments, ratings on Spotify. All of that is a big help as well. Peep is here. I don't know if she wants to say anything. Peep.
Peep.
She's been very quiet today. I know. She just gave a little meow. She's being a grump. Peep.
Even the kookaburras didn't make an appearance this episode.
I've been telling everyone that you weren't going to be silenced, and here you are, being silent. She's rubbing on the microphone. She's being a brat. She's meowing, but like, it's kind of like quiet and raspy. But just know she's trying her best. So that is it for this episode. We will talk to you guys next time. Oh, and check out our Patreon. I know we mentioned it at the start. It is less than $1 a week. We do bonus episodes, do all the episodes without ads. We have some fun chats, more peep content, all that good stuff. All right. So talk to you guys later. Peace out. Stay safe.
See ya.
Bye.